Hey there, All Access listeners. Jake Barnett here to talk about the WWE SmackDown that aired on February 5th. Before I get into too many things here, I just want to touch base with you about what is offered on the member side of ProWrestling.net. You get the ad-free version of the website, which to me is worth the price of admission alone, just because I detest online ads. You get a whole bunch of audio, editorial audio, review audio of Raw and SmackDown. Jason does .NET Weekly, which is full of exclusive news and information. He makes an appearance on the Pro Wrestling Torch live cast on Tuesdays, and we get the members version of that, as well as Will Pruitt and I's .NET Countdown show, the .NET member forum, the .NET member blog section, exclusive pay-per-view audios, exclusive predictions and coverage and things like that. So all of that stuff is very cheap and very available to you on the member info section of the main page, so I'd encourage you to check that out. On to the SmackDown show that aired a couple of nights ago. I'm recording this Saturday morning. The show started with a video package that focused on the Authority's announcement from Monday, the outcome of the match between Daniel Bryan and Seth Rollins at the end of Raw, Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns' conflict heading into Fastlane. Then we got the regular SmackDown introduction, and Michael Cole and the rest of the announce crew welcomed us to the arena. Eden Styles welcomed The Miz out immediately to start the show. I don't even think Cole had stopped doing introductions and welcoming everybody to Colorado Springs before she started talking. And the first segment of the night was Miz TV. Miz walked down to the ring, welcomed everyone to Miz TV, and began talking about his guests when he was immediately interrupted with a call for Mizdow. Some Mizdow chants in the crowd. Miz said they have Mizdow sitting at ringside like a good assistant. He fired him earlier this week. He's now an assistant, and so I guess the current angle, instead of splitting them up at the Royal Rumble like I had initially hoped they would, they are going to try to slow burn this a little bit longer by having Mizdow sit at ringside and have the Miz deny the crowd his antics. And I guess, you know, if they want to try to hold this out a little bit longer, it's a nice way to buy them some time. But I don't know how long people are going to stick with it. I hope they're right on this one and I'm wrong, but I think people are sort of ready for the split at this point. Miz started to introduce Daniel Bryan, who came out to the ring, and before he could really introduce Roman Reigns at all, he got a few words out. Roman Reigns' music hit, and he came down to the ring through the crowd like usual, and as soon as he got into the ring, he gave The Miz a Superman punch, which sent him crashing to the outside. Daniel Bryan just kind of smiled at him, didn't say anything, and Reigns grabbed a microphone that was sitting on one of The Miz's set chairs, kind of, that he has set up in the ring. He accused Bryan of thinking he was just going to slide in and steal his opportunity for a title match at WrestleMania. He talked about going through 29 men already, so one more is no problem for him. Reigns made his claims that he would defeat Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania and become the WWE Champion. He then went on to say that he did not want to wait for Fastlane to get his hands on Bryan, and he wanted to have their match right then and there. He and Bryan both looked like they were ready to start. They were clearing the chairs from the ring. At that point, we got the Seth Rollins music, so he interrupted here, and he said he hates to be a party pooper, but it's just kind of his thing. He claimed that he was on the verge of beating Bryan on Monday, except for Reigns' interference, and he would have been on the way to main event WrestleMania. Reigns kind of got that duck face look on his face where he was like, what? Whatever. And Bryan just kind of smiled in his usual kind of inappropriate way where you don't know, you know, if he does have a tendency to smile at the wrong times. And this was one of those where, you know, he could have been a little more serious. But Rollins then said it doesn't matter what happens at Fastlane or WrestleMania because he alone holds the future of the WWE inside the Money in the Bank briefcase. He then told Bryan that he had a match later in the show with himself and J&J Security, and so that set up the main event for later in the broadcast. They cut to the announce crew, who plugged that main event while Dolph Ziggler and Ryback were shown walking towards the ring through the backstage area, and Ziggler was carrying kind of a weightlifting belt that said the little guy on it, I guess. It didn't seem like they drew too much attention to it once they got out to the ring, so I'm guessing it's probably just a one-night kind of a ha-ha funny kind of thing and not them making them into a tag team. I guess the opening of the show was kind of logical in the sense that, you know, it set up the main event and it was a follow-up on the video packages they showed to open the broadcast, but I guess it, you know, it was just a hair underwhelming in terms of the verbal performances. I guess it was kind of funny to see Miz get knocked out of his own show so quickly, but I think he just would have been another weight on what was already a pretty flimsy storyline here. So it worked out to have him get cleared out of the ring. Brian didn't speak at all, which I thought was a little bizarre, and I'm not sure why they didn't want him talking. Maybe they just wanted to make sure that Reigns got his thing out, but it was strange that we didn't get more than a couple of smiles out of Brian in the opening segment. I would have preferred, you know, that he at least get a chance to explain himself, because there is a lot that he has to explain, at least in my mind, because he, you know, last year as he was going through the winter months and into the spring for WrestleMania, it was him who had the authority continually twisting the knife into him, and it was then that Roman Reigns was a heel and a part of the Shield that he had no problem putting the boots to Bryan whenever the authority called for it. So to me, I mean, when Reigns says that Bryan is trying to swoop in and steal his shot, maybe he could bring up that Reigns was, you know, pretty eager to deny him his shot at WrestleMania the last time he was going through, and then you have a little bit more layering in the storylines. Because as of right now, it looks like, well, you know, Bryan was the guy who got screwed all last year by the authority heading into WrestleMania. And now that, they're willing to twist the knife in Reigns, Bryan is perfectly willing to swoop in and be the beneficiary of the authority's shenanigans. So I don't know if it's necessarily a good thing for Bryan. And maybe that's really not what they're focused on, so it'll just end up getting swept under the rug. But it does make Bryan look like a bit of an opportunist, and I don't know if that's long-term the best for his babyface character. I mean, if they're trying to sow the seeds for him to not be a fan favorite anymore, then I guess maybe, you know, you could build on this. But I think they're just not paying attention to the details. I don't think they have any intention of actually turning him or going that route at all. I think it's just they don't see the conflict there, or they just don't care enough to paint in those details. But I mean, this particular opening segment, you know, continues to further the storyline between all three men. I have a hard time believing that we're really going to get Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns at Fastlane. I would not be shocked at all if the interference by Roman Reigns during that match on Monday is going to get Seth Rollins added back to that match in a triple threat, because, you know, honestly, I don't see any particular reason why you would have Roman Reigns or Daniel Bryan pin one another at this point. I think Seth Rollins can absorb these losses without, you know, losing anything, really. And, you know, that way, either Reigns or Bryan can move on to WrestleMania, whichever they choose to go with, without really taking anything off of the other one. Anyway, enough on that for now. After a commercial break, Renee Young spoke to The Miz. He said what happened to him earlier was unconscionable, and he challenged Reigns to a match later in the show. In the arena, Ryback and Ziggler made their entrance for the first match of the night. Goldust and Stardust were already out in the ring. They entered, untelevised. And the conclusion of this match was Ryback and Ziggler defeating Goldust and Stardust. In about 11:30, we had kind of a long commercial break in the early part of this match, so nowhere near 11 minutes and 30 seconds of this was actually televised, and I think that's probably a good thing. They telegraphed the finish pretty early on in the match when the dissension between Goldust and Stardust kind of started to rear its head. They argued early on, they showed them arguing on the WWE app during the break. When they came back from the commercial, you saw them starting to get on each other's nerves, and then they had control of the match for, you know, through that middle portion and towards the later part of the match, as all heels do in tag matches, where they were isolating Ryback and he was doing the bulk of the selling. The end of the match came when Goldust got left out to dry because he attempted to tag back into the match by calling Stardust Cody, which set him off, and he just slapped his brother to tag him in and then walked away. This led to Goldust eating a super kick from Ziggler and then shell shock from Ryback, who got the pin and the victory. I mean, to be honest, there's really no future in Ryback and Ziggler as a team. They don't have any particular chemistry. Their gimmicks seem a little incongruous. You know, one guy's, you know, doing the feed me boar bit, and Ziggler, while he's still the show off, really hasn't been lately. He's been trying to do this humble brag kind of thing, babyface character, and I don't know if it's working for him necessarily. And I really don't think it works just sticking him together with Ryback unless they have further refinements to both of their gimmicks planned. But, you know, Goldust and Stardust, I hope they give them a WrestleMania match out of this. I mean, we've been talking about Goldust and Stardust, or Goldust and Cody Rhodes, as it was, you know, before this year, you know, getting a chance to have that brother versus brother WrestleMania match. I want Cody back, you know, in a bad way. I think the Stardust character has sort of played itself out. I think the team of Goldust and Stardust, if they're not serious about making them heel tag team champions and giving them a run with the belts, I think that, you know, it's probably best that that they go on their separate ways, because I think, you know, Cody is at the point where, you know, he's in his I think he's in his late 20s or early 30s, where he really should be moving up towards that main event if it's ever going to happen. So, and Goldust is on his way out as well. We've been hearing rumors that he is heading back to be an agent. So it seems like the right time to make that happen for both of these guys, and I hope it does happen. But this match was nothing particularly special. You know, fans got the happy ending for a tag match. That's pretty much par for the course, and the you know, the way the match was structured was pretty much standard WWE tag team match. So, okay, killed a lot of TV time, but nothing particularly special about it. After the match, we got an Ernie Ladd video package that, you know, begins the celebration of Black History Month in WWE. The announced crew plugged the handicap main event, and then we got Dean Ambrose walking towards the ring backstage for another commercial. So, two commercials that are led into by superstars walking from the back towards the ring. As we came back, Curtis Axel was in the ring. He said not to change the channel, but change the course of history. He yelled that he was not eliminated from the Royal Rumble match, and that he should be headlining WrestleMania. He asked everyone to hashtag Axelmania in order to join his movement and get him into the WrestleMania main event. At that point, we had Dean Ambrose versus Curtis Axel. This was a pretty short one, 4 minutes long. Not a lot of offense for Axel. He started off early with a, you know, a few punches and kicks, and then he got to throw Ambrose over the top rope to continue his very ridiculous quest to get granted the Royal Rumble winner. But that wouldn't last. After that brief early spurt, it was all Ambrose. He hit his signature spots, the kind of the rope swing clothesline thing where he ducks under the top rope and then surges back and hits a clothesline. And then he hit the Dirty Deeds DDT and picked up the win. So nothing terribly exciting there. But after the match, man, this one just came across as totally, totally ridiculous to me. Bad News Barrett appeared on the screen to read breaking news, and they had some the scrolls along the bottom of the screen like you have during news broadcasts, and it was an obvious ripoff of TMZ, which appears to have some kind of relationship with WWE, because they feed them information, and stuff magically appears on TMZ first, and then WWE mentions TMZ on their broadcast when they break news, which wouldn't happen if they were actually reporting news. Remember, if you know, anything that's actually news, nobody wants reported. And anything that is reported is generally PR in some way, shape, or form. And so, especially in the entertainment news business. But so Barrett has what he called BNZ. And while this stuff was scrolling along the bottom of the page, and it was just ridiculous, stupid facts, and I can't remember any of them specifically, but you might get a chuckle out of them if you go back and watch the show and you read all of them, because I'm sure some of it was comical. But that's your Intercontinental Champion. He's doing a entertainment news spoof on top of his already kind of silly bad news gimmick. And he pointed out that, well, Dean Ambrose was far too unstable to get a title shot, and therefore wouldn't get one. And then he asked the crowd to stay tuned for more news later, which I, you know, when you just say later, I guess you kind of assume later in the show. But then he never appeared again. I don't know. I mean, I just don't think anybody who took themselves seriously as a champion would do this. And I mean, I could see a challenger, you know, trying to embarrass a heel champion by, you know, attempting to get under his skin by revealing embarrassing information or something, you know, like they used to do that a lot in the Attitude Era to get heels hot, was to, you know, hot by hot, I mean angry. So to anger a heel, a face would reveal some embarrassing, you know, bit of toilet humor or something about them, and everybody would have a laugh over it. I mean, it was kind of reminiscent of that, but I mean, just pointing out that Ambrose is mentally unstable, like, yeah, that's like his whole freaking gimmick. Like, we know he kind of embraces it. Like, why? And since when does being mentally unstable prevent you from getting title shots? I mean, we're talking about a bunch of pro wrestlers here. I mean, they're not really known as the bastions of sanity. You know, it's just kind of a weird... It was just a bad segment. I think it's below Barrett. I mean, as much as the bad news gimmick seemed ridiculous at first, you know, that actually kind of grew on you after a while, but they used it to build him after having him been gone for a long time, and so I can see, you know, that. But I mean, he came back and he won the championship on his first night. He's been losing non-title matches weekly on television, it seems, and now they give him another gimmick on top of it. Like, what, I mean, how is this supposed to get him more over? I just don't get it. Like, the bad news thing, when it was done in a clever way, I think he made it work. But now he's got to do that on top of this, and I don't know. I think it's just it reads destined for failure all over it to me. And I'll be happy to be proved wrong when Barrett's more over than ever, and the Intercontinental title's more over than ever. But somehow, I just don't see that happening. After another break, Fandango was in the ring as the show came back with Rosa Mendez. Adam Rose then made his entrance. Rose went to do his typical trust fall onto some of his party people at ringside, and they dropped him. It was and it wasn't like a, you know, he literally did a nasty plunge directly onto the floor. They caught him, but then they all fell down in a way that just kind of gently let Rose hit the floor. He then got up and did the Jekyll and Hyde bit where he was angry at Adam Rose and kicked all the rosebuds and laid them out. And then he eventually got pulled into the ring by Fandango for the third match. This one was all Fandango. 2 minutes and 37 seconds of Adam Rose getting the tar kicked out of him. There was maybe a few punches and kicks. I think a nice suplex onto the ring apron with both guys on the outside. Fandango rolled up Ambrose, nearly got a surprise victory after he was yelling at the Rosebuds for being Rosebuds, and then hit a spinning wheel kick in the Last Dance Alabama Jam for the win. When he just calls it the Last Dance, but I've always called that move the Alabama Jam. And that was pretty much it. I mean, I don't know what Fandango gets out of beating Adam Rose. I don't know why you waste even 2 minutes and 37 seconds on these stupid gimmicks, but they do, and that's what we got out of the deal. After another break, we got The Miz making his ring entrance, and he sent Miz Dow to ringside again to sit in a chair and deprive the crowd of his antics. Miz grabbed a mic and said that he had embarrassed him, or that Roman Reigns had embarrassed him, on Miz TV for the last time. If he wanted the main event WrestleMania so bad, he should come out and face somebody who actually did it. And that was actually about as good of a promo from The Miz as he could have asked for there, so well done there. So Reigns enters, we get about a 6-minute match from these two, and I think the Miz worked his ass off here to try to get Roman Reigns to look strong. I think he succeeded. Reigns looked exceedingly strong, or at least as much as he could in a short match without it being the total squash. And, I mean, the only thing that really stuck out to me in terms of Reigns was how limited his offense still is. It's signature moves and punches and clotheslines and shoulder tackles. It's like, you know, everything that people complain about when they talk about John Cena in terms of, you know, the five moves of doom and the limited move set and everything like that. It's the same thing, except he doesn't have, you know, a whole lot of offense outside of that. It's like it's not just the five moves of doom that close the match and that everybody kind of guffaws at because, you know, it's just the same pattern over and over again. It's literally he knows five moves. I mean, I'm sure he knows a bunch more, but the way that they have him currently wrestling, it's like, okay, he does seven clotheslines, he does that running jump kick on the outside with the opponent hanging over the apron, he does the spear, and he does the Superman punch, and then everybody cheers for him. And, I mean, this is a complaint that I guess you could extend to, you know, Daniel Bryan, too, if you wanted to. You know, they have him wrestling in a similar way where it's, you know, he might do the top rope back suplex or, you know, the running drop kicks and the suicide dives and the kicks on with the kneeling opponent and the running knee and whatnot. I mean, everybody knows that Daniel Bryan knows 14 million moves, but he only does like 12 of them anymore. And he still manages to have great matches because, you know, he's able to sell convincingly and build sympathy. But I don't think Reigns nearly has that kind of skill yet. He's not able to feel out a crowd, and he's not able to sell to the point where he's getting, you know, the kind of crazy sympathy that Bryan does because he's the consistent underdog. So that stuck out in a bad way. Reigns not having, you know, the move set to kind of wow people. It's just like, okay, you know, he hit like a fireman's carry into a pancake, and that was essentially it for moves outside of his normal rotation. So that was discouraging in a lot of ways. But even, you know, that being said, you know, the crowd gets up for his signature moves, the Superman punch specifically and the spear, and that works for him for now, but if he's tasked with being the man and carrying the whole company, I don't know how that's going to work out long term. I mean, I really don't, and that's concerning. But a nice effort from The Miz. He really sold everything well, you know, as well as you can sell clotheslines. But you know, he bumped around, so good for him. After this match, the announced crew plugged a rematch between Rowan and Rusev for next. And after the break, Rusev made his entrance with Lana. He got a nice little pop. Not a pop, but he got a nice amount of boos. Rowan, actually, I was surprised to hear, get a nice little reaction. In post-production, I guess it could have been sweetened up, but it wasn't like one of those over-the-top reactions where you would think they would have added anything to it. You know, it wasn't loud enough to be like, oh, man, that's clearly piped-in stuff. But good reaction for both guys, especially Rusev, who got mega heat, and that's working for him. This one was another fairly short match. They blew through a lot of the matches in the middle of the show in quick fashion. 4 minutes and 49 seconds was my time. USA chants immediately broke out as Rowan got the early advantage. He hit a big boot and a shoulder tackle, and Rusev managed to climb back in control with a spinning heel kick. Some big clubbing blows. Rowan hit a nice back elbow from the second rope. He went for, you know, the mounted 10 punches trope, which should be banned for forever, but they do it all the time for whatever reason. Rusev fought out of the corner and set Rowan down on the mat hard, basically kind of picked him up powerbomb style and just tossed him. He followed up with a sidekick as Rowan was trying to get to his feet, and then stomped on his back and put him in the accolade for a submission. So I thought this match was fairly energetic for two big men. I thought they both showed some agility that sort of, you know, you wouldn't think you'd get from two guys this size. They wrestled at a pretty good pace, too. So, you know, for guys that you, you know, wouldn't have necessarily expected to put on a match like this, I thought it was fairly good. I mean, you know, Rowan is clearly the greener of the two. I mean, in terms of, you know, he still looks a little clunkier in the ring than you would like in a lot of cases. But I think he's making progress. And, you know, with the consistent efforts like this, he'll start to win people over if they can put in the effort character-wise. After the match, we got the traditional, you know, Rusev having a stroke or something in the ring. He's just, the way he celebrates looks ridiculous. But the flag dropped successfully this time. He did the whole arm pump thing. You know, Lana, of course, just stands there clapping. Byron Saxton kind of came out with I guess, the preposterous statement of the night when, you know, he talked about John Cena's accomplishments briefly, like, 16-time world champion, you know, 2-time Rumble winner, whatever Cena is, and then, you know, main event of WrestleMania half a dozen times, but this match against Rusev, this will be the one that cements his legacy. I couldn't believe he got that out without laughing, but he did. And footage was shown of the Bellas hitting Paige with spray paint from last week, and then they went to a Paige interview backstage. She said she doesn't embarrass easily, but she was really embarrassed on Monday. She's not like other divas. She gets it. She's milky white. She's not the cookie cutter cutie pie like the Bella Twins, but they would be the ones embarrassed when she takes their Divas Championship at Fastlane. So pretty straightforward, basic promo from Paige. It's nice to see her getting some characterization, and the Bellas are doing their best and playing their part to shine her up a little bit, allow her to you know, embrace her babyface character. So it's working out fairly well in the Divas division. But, you know, just a fun short match from Rusev and Rowan. I mean, I don't know if that's a match you want to give a lot more time than it got, just because I'm sure as those guys get tired, it just progressively gets worse. But for what it was a fun little match. After another commercial break, we had Paige making her ring entrance. Alicia Fox was already in the ring, and we had a short Paige versus Alicia Fox match, 2:29. This one ended with Paige applying the PTO. Most of the match was Paige selling. Alicia hit a nice Northern Lights suplex, but Paige would come back with a trio of clotheslines and a couple of kicks, and then apply the PTO for the win. After the match, footage was shown of the double date between Naomi and Jimmy Uso and Tyson and Natty. It, of course, went horribly wrong when Kid was late to the dinner and ended up bringing Cesaro with him. Cesaro and Kid ended up getting into a verbal conflict with Jimmy and Naomi. They ended up kind of coming to blows with Kid knocking Jimmy out of his chair and onto the floor, and then Cesaro took a free shot as well. Natty ended up getting out of her seat, huffing and puffing, and she blamed Jimmy and Naomi for the conflict because they refused to back down from their verbal issue with Tyson, and they were trying to defend her, but she didn't see it that way. Anyways, a diva-focused segment, which isn't a bad thing. Paige looks pretty sympathetic as a babyface heading into her title match. Natty desperately needs a character, so I am full-on embracing the possibility that she is going to join Tyson and Cesaro in becoming a heel and sort of cementing a little group there. I mean, they need something for her, and Tyson Kidd is kind of coming into his own as a character, along with Cesaro, who appears to have found a tag team that he can kind of hide away from the eye of Sauron and creative inside of, and just kind of deliver in the ring, and you know, that's a good thing. I think both of those guys will enjoy being a tag team together, and hopefully they can get a meaningful tag team championship win on the way to becoming single stars, which they both eventually will. After that, a Bray Wyatt promo aired. I'll read some quotes. He said he is a man defined by his actions, but he is no man after all. He is everywhere and everything. He is the spirit of perpetual negation. He is the Reaper. What is it that makes you think you're immune to me, or that there are no repercussions to your actions? You are blinded by pride, and now the devil is knocking at your door. Let him in. Let me in. And then fade to black. So, Daniel Bryan made his full ring entrance, complete with the Yes Chant dance that he does on his way down to the ring. I don't know, you know, it's clear that they're pointing Bray Wyatt in the direction of The Undertaker, and after last year's Mania, seeing The Undertaker's output, you know, concussion or no concussion, I just don't think he's the same guy anymore. Physically, I think he's too beat up to go out there and have, you know, those five-star classics that people talk about him having with Shawn Michaels, and even, you know, lesser circumstance with Triple H or CM Punk. You know, those were matches where the guys he was working with could cover up a lot of his faults and just kind of accentuate the positives. And I'm not sure if Bray Wyatt is necessarily that guy. Brock Lesnar certainly was not that guy. And The Undertaker ended up kind of putting on a plodding, rather boring match at WrestleMania 30. Of course, hampered by the concussions, but to what degree, I guess we don't know. But I don't know if I like the Bray Wyatt and Undertaker angle yet or not. I'm willing to embrace it when we see, you know, the full reveal and we get the Undertaker back on TV and he's able to you know, have his hocus pocus contest with Bray Wyatt or whatever they're going for. I'm not sold on it yet, but I'm not completely against it. I'm taking a wait and see approach, but at this point, I don't know what Bray Wyatt's talking about. I mean, I get, you know, the Reaper part of it, and him wanting to be the new boogeyman in WWE, and all that's fine, but it seems kind of flimsy for a story for a WrestleMania match with The Undertaker. I mean, historically, at least for the past 5 years, he's had, you know, this monumental streak to put on the line, and now, you know, the contest to see who gets to be the boogeyman of WrestleMania seems a little bit underneath what you would expect from him, so I hope I'm wrong. I guess I'll put it that way. But I am not enthused about what we've seen so far. After a commercial break, we saw the Bryan entrance before the break. Seth Rollins made his entrance with J&J Security, and then we got our final match of the night. Daniel Bryan defeated Seth Rollins and J&J Security at 14-12. For the most part, this match was Bryan attempting to keep one of the J&J Security members in the ring and you know, take it to them to try to soften them up to put one of them away. And, you know, he was able to succeed for short periods of time, and then he would fall victim to, you know, a distraction or you know, the ref getting pulled aside by another member of the team so they could do a double team, or, you know, the typical dirty tricks of the Authority or any you know, tag team with a numbers advantage, really. I mean, it's just the way it works. So Bryan sold for a lot of the match, especially when Rollins was in the ring. Rollins was able to, you know, to dominate, and Bryan would get a hope spot in here, you know, here or there, but he would get quickly crushed. But late in the match, Bryan was able to dump Rollins to the outside along with Jamie Noble. And then he was able to successfully keep both of them outside of the ring long enough for him to hit some offense on Joey Mercury's name. There it is, Joey Mercury. So late in the match, Bryan had, you know, Rollins and Noble had climbed up on the apron, and Bryan was able to knock them down again. And then he got rolled up from behind by Joey Mercury, which he quickly reversed into the Yes Lock, and Mercury tapped immediately to give Bryan the victory. So Bryan outsmarts the heels this time, and then he bails up the ramp quickly to avoid falling victim to the numbers game, at which point Kane attacks him from behind on the top of the ramp, and he then drags him back to the ring where he hits a couple of choke slams, and then J&J Security sets Bryan up for the curb stomp, and we go off the air with Seth Rollins, Kane, and J&J Security celebrating, and Rollins, you know, yells to Bryan as he lays there motionless that that he will have a hard time getting to Fastlane if he has anything to do with it. So I thought the close of the show was good. I like the fact that they are continuing to you know, put Rollins in place to sort of be a thorn in the side of both Reigns and Bryan heading into the Fastlane show. At this point, I hope that we see Rollins get added to that match as a triple threat. I do, because really, to be honest, I don't think we want to see Bryan or Reigns get a cheap win through a schmoz, because I don't think we'd get a clean finish out of a Bryan versus Reigns match. And if we do, it'll be the worst of all situations, because it'll be Reigns getting the victory and they'll have Bryan hold his hand up and give him the endorsement. And the crowd's just going to crap all over that, just like they crapped all over what happened at the Royal Rumble. So I hope WWE is smart enough, and I think they are. I mean, at least Triple H seems to be clever enough to realize what he's dealing with here. So that Rollins should be in that match. They can, as soon as he can take the loss, and on Monday night they can get Rollins all of his heat back and transition him into whatever his WrestleMania story is going to be. So I think we're going to see that match happen at Fastlane, and then Reigns will probably end up beating Rollins to go to WrestleMania, which is just fine by me. But, as far as the match is concerned, I liked it. I thought they, for a 3-on-1 where the guy who doesn't have the numbers advantage gets the victory, they managed to play it off as well as they could. I mean, it seems ridiculous on the surface, but with the way it played out, with Bryan successfully able to keep Rollins and Noble out of the ring and then kind of get a quick tap-out victory, it at least didn't stretch credulity too much, which is what you fear and what we got when the Shield faced CM Punk, and it was just kind of ridiculous. The post-match tack was what it was. I think Kane coming back this early after a casket match loss is kind of stupid. I could have dealt with them just having Kane go away for a while. Maybe bring another younger person into the authority mix as, one of their favored people, to take on somebody else. Maybe bring in, instead of giving Barrett that stupid BNZ gimmick, maybe make him the authority's pet, since they, basically handed him the Intercontinental title when he returned by putting him in a match with Ziggler after he'd already competed. I mean, that kind of thing can work. I mean, I think that would work a lot better than giving him a stupid current events or a breaking news gimmick. So overall, I think this was a pretty mediocre addition to SmackDown. The main event was entertaining. Rusev and Rowan was entertaining. The opening segment did a decent job of setting the stage for the story, but everything else just kind of felt like filler. And that's what we used to get a lot of on SmackDown prior to them moving to Thursdays and putting a little extra effort into it. So I really hope this isn't a pattern and we get back to better shows, especially as we're heading towards WrestleMania. So that'll do it for me this week, everybody. I hope you had a good time listening, and I hope you subscribe to ProWrestling.net, and we will see you all very soon. Thanks.